Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 7th day of October, Anno Domini 2023. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Did you pay your dues? Here comes the news. First piece of news, and we'll re-announce this several times during
Wait,
the show.
Can I interrupt for 1 minute?
No!
I got to do a special happy birthday.
Oh, well, all right then.
To Harry Legg.
Harry!
Today is his birthday, and he has been doing our intro, what, over 20 years now?
Yep.
At least, yep.
Yeah. Yep, it's the Legg Man's birthday.
I remember when he was first in town, he created a radio name. It was Scott James in the morning.
Yep.
No, your name is Harry Legg. And you had to talk him to him. Your real name is Harry Legg.
Yeah.
You have to use it.
Yeah, and he did. And
and his sister Peg. And
right. first announcement before I get to the news is that the lounge is coming back. Steve and I will be in the Soundbites Lounge tomorrow night at Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. Just go to soundbites.org/lounge, and right now you'll not see the link because it's not Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern time. But when it is Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern time, refresh the page. There will be a link to the video chat. Please read the page before you come in. Before you come in, because there's some important points and also how to turn on your mic and all of that other stuff. So pay attention to a little bit of that stuff. And if you've got a computer question or comment or suggestion or addition, deletion to the minutes, you can do that there.
I'm going to say, Dave, if you can stay up past 9 o'clock, you could stop in and say hi for a minute.
Yeah. Let's see very well might.
We'll be there. So here's the news. At Google's latest Pixel launch event on Wednesday, it officially announced the Pixel 8 Pro, which comes with quite a few upgrades. Oh, by the way, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. The upgrades include a Tensor G3 chipset along with an updated rear camera array with a 50-megapixel main sensor, a 48-megapixel telephoto lens with 5x zoom, and a 48-megapixel ultra-wide camera. It will even have a new zoom enhance feature, which has always been a joke in the science fiction world. Zoom and enhance that can retroactively add detail to an image when you pinch to zoom in. The Pro also comes equipped with a temperature reader that Google says you can use to accurately measure the temperature of surfaces, objects, and soon, maybe even your body. It actually works, but it hasn't been approved by the FDA yet. So they can't say you can use it to take your temperature. You know, like the ones they do now where they don't even touch you. They
swipe
just,
it across the forehead.
Yep. So they're not allowed to say that yet. I can say it because I don't care. The new Pixel 8 is getting a performance boost thanks to the addition, not the Pro. The regular Pixel 8 is also getting a performance boost thanks to the addition of Google's G3 Tensor processor. It's got a 6.2-inch OLED display. It's slightly smaller than its predecessor. Both the 8 and the 8 Pro will also get access to the new AI-powered editing features within Google Photos, including Magic Editor and Best Take. The Pixel Watch 2 comes with a lot of improvements, such as the more efficient Qualcomm Snapdragon W5 processor that allows for up to 24 hours of battery life, even with always-on display turned on. There are new sensors for skin temperature and continuous electrodermal activity that enable a new stress-detecting feature, as well as a way to automatically record workout starts and stops for 7 different activities. The Pixel Buds Pro are getting conversation detection, which will automatically pause your audio and turn on transparency mode when it detects that you're speaking. So if you're listening to something and somebody comes up and starts talking to you, it'll cut out the song so that you can talk to people.
What would it do? The AirPods already have that.
I know.
Well, I wonder what it would do, Samsung, though, if you're on a phone call.
Then it knows that you're on a phone call. This is only for songs,
okay,
for music.
And when the phone rings, it already mutes your audio.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Google is also trying to improve voice call quality with the addition of Bluetooth Super Wideband. Dun-da-da. The Buds Pro will also support Google's clear calling feature that helps to reduce background noise on calls. Both of those features will be available in an upcoming firmware update. Android 14 is finally here, offering improved passkey support, a new health tracking feature, several customization updates. One interesting, maybe even neat personalization feature arriving with Android 14 is AI wallpaper generation, which you can use to create a new background by simply describing an image. I can't wait to see how that'll be used. It will be available to Pixel phones 4A, 5G, and newer first, while phones from other companies will add support later this year. So if you've got a Pixel phone that's at least the 4A, 5G.
I got the 6.
When you get 14, you'll have that AI wallpaper generation. Free. Google has also announced that we'll offer 7 years of OS security and feature drop updates for both of those phones. That means Pixel 8 users can expect to get updates until the year 2030. Google is launching Assistant.
The phone won't last that long.
Exactly. Google is launching Assistant with Bard, an AI-enhanced version of the personal assistant that's coming to Android and iOS in the coming months. The tool will integrate with Google's apps like Gmail and Docs and will be able to help you do things like create a caption for a photo, create grocery lists, and find information in your email inbox. Everything's AI now. God forbid we do anything without AI. Anyway, our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you is Google's Pixel 8 launch event. Your choices are, I want everything, some very interesting stuff, sort of intriguing, meh, goo-hoo now, and I love all of these choices. So far, and I'm a little shocked to say this, but delighted, we already have 114 votes, which is great.
Yeah, thank you.
So far, of course, goo-hoo now is number one. I believe somebody's figured out how to get around the one vote per person, which is nothing I've ever really worried about. I don't care.
You got that much free time.
This is not a scientific poll.
No.
It's just something to put on the website, so I don't care.
But the only reason I keep hanging on to my, like we were talking before, the phones, and this is true with Google phone or any other phone, since they did away with being able to remove the battery. That's what killed my last phone, my 5.
Yep.
The phone still worked great, except for the stupid battery.
Yep.
I'd charge it up, it'd be 100% in the morning. By noon, and I hadn't used it, but maybe check a couple emails, it was down to 20%.
Yep.
So it's the battery that wears out first before the actual phone.
Yep. Yeah. My daughter had a Galaxy Flip. The phone that folded in half like a clamshell.
Flip screen.
But the problem is it got a bubble in the hinge on the screen. She's had it for 2 years, and she's of the generation that opens and looks at her phone 7,000 or 8,000 times a day.
And when they came out, that was the big question, is how many folds is it going to work to open and close? How long is it going to last? Well, apparently the answer is 2 years.
2 years with the kind of use my daughter gave it. So she's now got a 7A. My wife said, I got a free upgrade. You know, not a free upgrade, but
a deal. Yep.
You can have that. So she did, because my wife is one of those people who, this phone works fine, thank you very much. I'm done now. She's like you. Until I absolutely have to change it, I'm keeping it.
You know, I'm hearing more and more folks, I don't know whether you two have heard, as far as carriers, that right now, AT&T is outperforming Verizon, and it's cheaper. That the 5G is far better with AT&T than it is with Verizon. And this is, matter of fact, from one of the folks from RIT that's in our ham club was saying, no, no, you got to switch over to this. He goes, no dropouts. Speed is unbelievable for uploads, downloads, and everything else.
The strange thing is they're all pretty much the same. And they're all correct in each of their advertising. This one has the fewest dropped calls. This one is the fastest. It's 502 megs, and the other one is 501 megs.
Right.
This one has the most reliable customer service because their scores are 10 out of 11 instead of 9 out of 11.
Right.
So the funny thing: how can all of those commercials be right? Because they don't compare against the same things.
Right. Yeah, they're not comparing apples to apples. It's apples to oranges. It's just like same back when Intel and AMD were coming out with their different chips. They'd both tout this and that. We're faster. And the other one would say, no, we're faster. And go back. And it was a matter of semantics and what they were saying. This, you know, was faster about the chip.
Right. Well, and you get that nowadays in with the Raspberry Pi. All these benchmarks on the different versions of the Raspberry Pi, most of them are about retro gaming. I don't do retro gaming.
Yeah.
I don't care about retro
gaming. Did you order your 5?
No. Waiting for the kit.
Okay. You're like me.
Waiting for the kit. Somebody else did one that said, oh, it's much better for crypto mining. I don't care about crypto mining.
On your phone?
No, on the Raspberry Pi.
Oh, Raspberry Pi. Okay, yeah.
For the 5. The things I care about are not the same thing that everybody's touting right now. So all of these benchmarks are useless to me. I don't care about them. Exactly. I'm hearing the same nonsense about the new Google phones and the new Google announcements that we heard about the Apple announcements. Nothing revolutionary, just evolutionary. Well, yeah.
It's a phone.
It's a phone. They pretty much do everything they can do now.
And we're in the 15th, 20th year since smartphones came out.
Right.
And now, what are we going to add next?
Right. Well, it just keeps changing. I'm sorry to say it, but it keeps changing us to a dumber society. And the fact that, you know, folks are forgetting to put down their phones when they're together with families. And, do this thing that we used to do back in the 50s and 60s. Talk to each other.
Right. It's evolutionary, not revolutionary. You know what? Get over yourself. The simple reality is that right now, there isn't anything that new under the sun that's out for public consumption at the moment. Are we going to see something next year? Maybe. But the reality is that if you look back at the phone you bought 10 years ago and the phone you buy today,
10-year challenge.
they really are worlds apart. So if you know, this phone had come out back then, you would have said, oh, it's a revolution. It's something brand new and different and wonderful as opposed to an evolution. You know, the old thing, we all time travel. We only do it in one direction, and we do it a day at a time.
Yep. And most, because there isn't that big of an incremental difference year over year, most people don't upgrade every year.
Right.
2, 3, 4 years. The iPhone 15, if you've got an 11 or 12, you probably might want to think about it. But a 13,
or
maybe?
Or a 14?
A 14, no.
Well, that's
unless you're a photographer and you want that 120-millimeter lens in the Pro.
Right.
The Pro Max, though, has that one.
Right. And that's it.
Yeah.
The problem is, what we're seeing now is that they are getting more and more niche. You know, niche markets.
Yep.
Let's get a better camera. You know what? In all honesty, most people don't care about a better camera. Yeah. What excited more people was night shoots.
Mm-hmm.
When Google first came out with the Tensor chip, and one of the big things was you could take low light photos and they would look
nice,
as good
as.
Yeah. You mean I can go to the club and take pictures of me and my friends or at a party, a birthday party,
fireworks.
Computational photography.
Exactly.
The megapixel count doesn't matter as much anymore. The lens count doesn't matter as much anymore.
Yeah. Right. Most of the time, look, most of the time people are showing pictures on their phones. Oh, look, I got a new picture of my kid. Oh, look, I got, this is my new car. It doesn't matter that it's a 7 gigapixel picture.
Yeah.
You're looking at it on a 4-inch screen.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Doesn't mean squat.
Doesn't mean squat. So what people are more interested in are those extra features. Now, you know, one of the things that this has is best take. So you take a bunch of shots, click, 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 and the Google AI then says, this is the best one.
Microsoft had a feature like that years ago in one of their phones before they got out of the phone market.
Yes. So, the problem with it wasn't very good.
Yeah. Well, because it was years and years ago.
Years ago.
So you take a picture of five people, and in every frame, one of them is either looking closing the wrong direction or got an eye closed or
doesn't have a smile.
Yeah. So it averages out, finds the best piece of each photograph, and generates a photograph.
Right.
So now you can't trust photographs.
Right. Well, that's been true for a while.
Well, you could always Photoshop them, but usually right out of the phone, right out of the camera, even it was pretty safe that was what the camera saw, but not anymore.
Not anymore. But yeah, so there's a whole lot of little features that are useful to some people. For many of us, the beauty of a Pixel phone is the unlimited free
storage
for photos. We've talked about this a million times. You can recreate documents. You can recreate spreadsheets. You can't recreate photos. You can't.
Hmm.
Although that's changing now with AI, so who knows. But right now you can't do that. So the thing you need to back up
photos
are your photos.
And especially in the Mac world, there was in the 2015 to 2017 area, Apple tried something called a Fusion Drive. SSDs were coming online, but they were really expensive,
right,
especially in larger capacities. So Apple had a Fusion Drive that put a small SSD for your OS and your apps and a big spinning drive for capacity. And it's technically a RAID.
Right.
But they're all now starting to fail.
Yes, they are.
I got four of them in the shop right now trying to resurrect data. And it's weird because one of them, I'm getting a smart failure on the spinning drive. And the other one doesn't recognize the SSD.
Wow.
So we always thought SSDs were more reliable. They're differently reliable.
Mm-hmm.
They still fail about the same rate as spinning drives, which, you know, companies like Google and Backblaze who've gone through hundreds of thousands of drives. It's about 20% per year for either type of drive. So if your drive is 5 years old, there's a 100% chance it's going to fail.
Yep.
So because it's a RAID, it's especially difficult to recover data from.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And so backup, please backup, backup, mm-hmm. backup.
Yeah, you don't have enough backups. One of the things that I do.
Because then, the next step is sending it to Drive Savers for $2,000 or $3,000.
To start with,
yeah.
One of the things that I do with every one of my Raspberry Pis is I set it up with an old drive that I pulled out of a laptop. Are those safe for now? But when I've got five of them running, I don't care if one dies.
Mm-hmm.
But if I've only got one running, I absolutely care if it dies.
Yeah, we had a customer a few months ago. His computer died and his RAID died. He had a RAID mirror for safety with his giant photo library. Both drives failed at the same time.
Oh, no.
But not completely dead. They would hang the computer. It would hang while reading and writing. And we're not sure if that caused the computer to die because we had to put a new logic board in his computer. And the company that made the RAID box just was sending me through hoops to diagnose the problem because they didn't want to replace it because it's under warranty. Well, you know, try running this, try a different cable, try a different computer, try this, try that, send us a recording of the weird noise it's making. I can hear what the bad noise it's making. And they finally, they took it, they replaced both the drives, kept the same enclosure though. Yeah, okay, that's warranty policy. But yeah, so the so we're thinking, what are the chances of both drives failing at once?
Well, apparently 100%.
Well, yeah, and I'm thinking, well, they're probably both manufactured at the same time, probably in the same batch, so pretty high.
When they go, they go.
Yeah. Fortunately, he had a backup.
That's important. Did you all hear that, folks?
Yeah.
Fortunately, he had a backup.
So he didn't rely on the mirror being a backup because the mirror dies.
Mirrors are not backups.
Yep.
One thing that I did is just this past week is I have four different Gmail accounts. Well, gee, I'm using one of the accounts for my G Drive that I store a lot of stuff to. I thought, I've got three other addresses that are offering me 15 gig of free storage.
How interesting.
So what I did is took each one of my Raspberry Pis that I'm backing up stuff to and sent them to each one of those different G Drives for the different accounts. So each Raspberry Pi goes to a different email account where there's now, you know, and I don't have maybe but 4 or 5 gig on them right now.
Right.
So I'm copying it over to there. And again, it's free storage. It's just free storage. Another storage that I don't have to pay a penny for. And it's free. It's, it was sitting there not being used.
Yep.
Well, so, there is a service. I'll put a link in the show notes called MultiCloud.
Yeah.
And it will take all of the cloud storages that you have from all the different accounts and multiple of the same account,
right,
merge them together. So on your drive, it looks like you have a 10 terabyte cloud drive.
Right.
And by using the free space on everyone's system.
Cool.
But then what you really have is one copy out there. So it's a little different from what
So this gives you more storage, not safe storage.
Right.
I mean, it just added another, you know, it didn't take me but, you know, a couple of hours to set it all up to utilize this free stuff. And again, just add to one more backup of stuff that I want to protect.
You cannot have enough backups. Huh? One of the things that I keep telling people is, do you have Amazon Prime? You have unlimited picture storage. Yep. Why are you not using it? Yep. Get that one more backup. Is it the best backup? Probably not. And I don't care.
I have photos stored on dozens of services because every time a new service comes online, I put some up there.
Yep, yep.
Oh, one thing I got to admit, and I got to give her credit. My wife actually is today. I've had it on her computer for months.
Mm-hmm.
But is setting up EnPass.
Nice.
Finally.
Nice.
No lie, Nick. If you ever saw, she has sheet after sheet after sheet of different passwords.
Oh, yeah.
No, I crossed this one out to go to this sheet, cross that one out. She finally said, that's enough. And we figured out, because she, again, months ago, set up her password.
Right.
We got it all set up. And she's now sitting home today, creating all new paths and getting them in.
Good for her. Yeah, good for her.
Took a while, but
you know, but at least she got it in. That's what counts.
Yeah, no, she's slowly setting them up because she saw how easy it is for me that I can just go to a website and I got EnPass running. That I just click on it and it fills it all out.
Yep.
And I says, and these are not simple passwords. She goes, what do you mean? And I showed her in EnPass that they're like 56 characters long.
Right.
And it's like, oh, okay.
And you got to make sure your backups work.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing. Yeah. They're not backups if you haven't verified them.
In fact, that we got 20 seconds. That happened with my customer. I restored from his backup, and it got 700 gigs back. Not the 4 terabytes he was expecting. So we go to the next to last backup, because it backed up after the drive started dying.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites. This is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And just a reminder, we will be doing the Soundbites Lounge tomorrow night. 7 p.m. Sunday night, every Sunday night at 9 p.m. I don't know why I said 7.
Yeah.
Every Sunday night at 9 p.m., go to soundbites.org/lounge, and at 9 p.m. refresh the page, and you'll see a link into the video chat. And Steve and I will be there, and maybe even Dave Enright will well, if I can stay awake to start the chat, because I'm still not at 100%, and there are nights I'm not awful. Depends on what my day's been like.
Do you want to say 8?
What?
Do you want to say 8?
No, I do not.
Yeah, if it's too early, then you're still doing stuff.
Exactly. So 9 o'clock Sunday nights, 9 o'clock Eastern time. I don't care where you are. I'm in the Eastern time zone. We'll be doing that. So we'd love to see you join us there.
8, that'd be 0 UTC time. That's the easiest way to do it. That way, no matter what, if folks are in other time zones and all that, or even other countries, you just go by UTC time, and everybody can figure that out.
We are Americans.
We just talk louder.
Right.
Yeah, but UTC time, unlike so many other places here in just the U.S., some change, roll their clocks back, some don't, you know, so it's confusing. UTC time never changes. It doesn't roll back or roll forward. It always stays the same.
As long as my computer tells me it is currently 12:37 p.m. in the Eastern time zone, I'm a happy
That's
camper.
All you well,
and, yeah, currently, 9 p.m. Eastern is 0100 UTC.
Sure, 1 o'clock in the morning.
Because we haven't leapt forward yet.
Actually, on my home computer, I wrote a little Python program that keeps a window up, a GUI window up that shows me time zones in a half a dozen different places, because I've got programmers in other countries, I've got friends in other countries, and
keep track of all that.
One of them is UTC, and one of them is Manila, and one is Australia, and I'm all over the place. So
I only got in the habit because I got this two friends in Australia, and we kind of, and you know, I don't want to be calling them at two o'clock in the morning their time. It's usually evenings that I'm calling them for me, and it's morning for them because it's 13 hours difference.
In fact, I just got a text from my friend in Manila, and I have no idea what she thinks is going on, because it's midnight for it. She is exactly 12 hours ahead of us, so it's midnight for her. She's a night owl.
Oh, okay.
So she's texting.
You got to be a lot younger then.
Yeah.
I was gonna say.
Yeah,
I'm lucky. What's, you know, like you say, 9 o'clock.
Yeah, it's been some of those. I've been still up at 4 a.m.
Yes.
Getting up at no, can't do that.
Yeah, I've only known 6 a.m. from behind.
Yeah.
I'm coming up to it. All right, I will read the news item, but you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Apple likes to crow about how secure its products are, but no system is perfect, and iOS is looking somewhat less perfect lately. Apple this week rushed out a patch for iOS 17 that addresses two major security flaws. Users are advised to update immediately because at least one has been actively used to attack various iDevices. The update to iOS and iPadOS 17.0.3, began rolling out on Wednesday, its third in as many weeks, by the way. It includes patches for two vulnerabilities. One is a bug in the WebRCT version currently included in the WebKit browser engine on iOS. The flaw could cause a buffer overflow that enables arbitrary code execution. How often do I have to say that? Which can theoretically do almost anything to your device. As for the other vulnerability, well, that's a little more complicated. Apple has only provided limited information, and vulnerability tracker provided by NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, says the bug is still under investigation, so some data are not being disclosed at this time. Apple does note that it is aware of evidence that this vulnerability has been used in the wild to hack devices. Pay attention. Apple has said that it is aware of evidence that this vulnerability has been used in the wild to hack devices. What we know right now is that vulnerability could allow a local attack to elevate their privileges, attacker to elevate their privileges, and make changes to the system. In the old days, this probably would have been a prime candidate for a jailbreak utility. Now it's just a security nightmare for Apple. As for the mitigation, Apple says the issue is addressed with improved checks, whatever that means. The bug was also present in other browsers and platforms, including Mozilla Firefox and Google Chrome, where it has already been patched. This is the 16th time a zero-day flaw in Apple's iOS and macOS software has been observed in the wild this year. When this happens, users are potentially at the mercy of threat actors until Apple releases a patch. It's a good idea to update your phone and your operating system on your desktop or laptop, lest it fall into the hands of someone who knows their way around the exploit. So if you've been holding off on the iOS 17 update, let this be the nudge you need. There is no patch for iOS 16.7. So the only way to be safe from these exploits is to get on the latest software. Nice to see that Apple is catching up to Microsoft in this area. So give us a call, assuming your iPhone is still under your control. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
And we've been very wary in the Mac community to don't upgrade to macOS 14.0 Sonoma yet.
Right.
Don't upgrade to iOS 17.0 yet. Right. Wait for other people to find the problems. And that was one of Scott's problems last week, right?
Right.
Ran into a compatibility issue that you have to check your own compatibility problems before you upgrade, which is always annoying.
Yeah, I think on Scott's issue, though, I think it died halfway doing the transfer process.
That can happen, too.
Right.
But, yeah, so we've got security patches for iOS 17, but I don't think we've had any bug patches yet. So I tend to wait for 17.1.
Right. And this is what, 17.0.1?
0.3.
You know, talking about that.
0.3, right.
And going back to the phones and all the features and all that, that's the one thing I think Microsoft and Mac is running into is, you know, they roll out their OS is like Windows and all that. But what more can they do to it? You know, I mean, other than rearranging the buttons around or giving it a different look, it's still Windows 11 isn't much different than Windows 7.
Right.
Moving the start button to the center of the screen. Why? And it really annoyed people. Apple tried that from the 9 to 10 change. They moved the Apple logo to the top center instead of the top left, where it's been for 20 years before that. We're now 20 years down the road. It's back to the it was back to the left back then. So
right,
it's
right. People change.
A major change like that.
People don't like change. But we need to get past the idea that Macs don't have problems. I'm sorry. I know that each and every one of you Mac people really, really wants to think that your operating system is perfect.
None.
It is not. No operating system is perfect. How do I know this? They're written by humans. I'm sorry.
So when the AI writes its own OS, it'll be okay?
Man, no. I didn't say that.
Because the AI was programmed by humans.
Mac, right. No, just like PCs, have version types.
Yep. Right.
Revisions, I should say. Seven, like you were saying, instead of going with 17, wait till 17.1 because they'll find something. That's just the way it is with any OS,
yep.
Even Linux. You know, there are constantly the various flavors that come out on that, always doing updates.
We had a customer this week brought in his computer, said it's running slow, he can't get on websites. He's running system 10.7.
Yeah.
That's like Windows 3.
Yep.
Yes, you cannot get on websites.
Right.
Well, I used Quick in 2012.
Yeah.
Then you can't upgrade your 10-year-old OS.
Right.
Because you've got a 10-year-old program that you would have to upgrade first.
Go to Money Dance. It's free.
So that's
Money Dance is free. But the true reality is that if you're not on the latest, you've got problems. If you are on the latest, you've got problems.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I get that people don't like change and they don't want to upgrade, but the fact is, You got to do it. You got to do it at some
point. Or then don't complain because it's not running correctly,
right,
or it gets infected and other upgrades cause problems with that particular program, because it's bound to happen.
It's going to happen.
It's just a fact of life. Everybody else wants everything else to move faster, bigger, better, faster.
Right.
And the only way they're going to do it is by improving.
The closest you can get to really working right is if you're using Linux and you never go outside your repository. Now, it's easy not to go outside your repository because there's hundreds of thousands of programs in every repository. So, you know, as long as you stay inside your repository.
And never go on the internet.
And never go on the internet, you'll be all right. Anyway, let's go to the phones instead of the internet, and we'll talk to Bill from Greece, New York. Hi, Bill. What's up?
Hi, guys. You probably have this already, but maybe you can explain it to me. It seems like the Intel CFO, David Zintner, did a speech where he talked about a major refresh for Windows in 2024, and Intel would be making new chips for the new system. But the thing I'm wondering, he mentioned that it was going to be a modular design. Does that mean we're finally going to go to the subscription service in 2024?
Well, that's certainly what people are beginning to say. We've been saying this for years. Microsoft has been telling its investors for 3 years now that they are going to go to a subscription model. They keep putting it off, but they keep telling their investors at every one of their investor meetings, their yearly investor meetings. And as we know, you do not lie to your investors.
And their stock price went up 2.3% after the announcement.
That's exactly right. So the likelihood is that at some point in the near future, they're going to do that. Now, the speculation is that it's going to be essentially... It's going to be Windows 12, whatever they end up calling it. It'll be the next version of Windows. And one of the things that is being speculated, and again, please, people, this is all rumor and speculation. I know we don't normally talk about rumors here because then I get, well, you said.
Yeah.
But this is just rumor that essentially they're going to turn Windows computers into Chromebooks. They're going to load the operating system from
everything on the cloud,
the web. It's going to be all on the cloud. And it's going to load pieces and parts, and it'll be up there, and you will pay a yearly subscription for the privilege of owning a Windows machine. That's the rumor, not fact, rumor. But yes, Bill, that's one of the things that the Intel CFO talked about.
And one of the big advantages of that is that you'll always be running the latest version with the latest patches and bug fixes and security updates.
Right.
You won't have to worry about managing that yourself.
Hopefully.
Well, yeah, that's the point of them doing it at the other end.
Right.
So how do I install Linux?
Exactly. Get another older machine and start playing with it.
And you said something about an A-B switch?
Yeah, what an A-B switch lets you have multiple computers on the same monitor and keyboard.
KVM, we used to call it.
We used to call them a KVM switch, and they still have keyboard, video,
mouse.
So what you do is you hook up one keyboard, video, and mouse to this device, and then you hook up the leads to multiple computers from it, and then you just punch a button. I want to be on computer A, I want to be on computer B, I want to be on computer C. I once had one that had six outputs. I only used three of them, but I had one that had
It comes with the box, which is a switch, and then a set of cables to connect to, like,
each
if you
computer,
bought a
right.
four point switch, it would come with four sets of cables that you could then hook up the keyboard, mouse, and monitor to each of those computers. Then it comes to the switch.
And a lot of times, you know, a small two position KVM is, you know, under $50.
Right. Yeah.
We had a customer once that had two computers, two monitors on each computer. He wanted either computer to run one or four monitors. That was $1,000 KVM.
Yeah. Yeah. But yes, you can set up multiple computers using KVMs. You just have to buy the right KVM. And you can switch them back and forth with a single key press on the
little box.
Usually it's a physical key press on the box. Yeah. Some of them actually have software that will let you do it from the keyboard.
Or if you have a tower type computer, you can just put two hard drives in and you pick whether you want to boot the Windows drive or you boot the Linux drive.
Right, but then it's a reboot each time as opposed to two machines constantly running.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of people actually just get an old laptop and put Linux on it to play with until they're comfortable.
Like me, right now I've got two boxes at home that I got fed up with Windows, and I put Linux on them. Because the only thing that was holding me back before, and I've told this story before, was QuickBooks.
Right.
And I did a little search and found Money Dance. Money Dance, and I paid the, hold on to your seats, $49.99 for a lifetime upgrades and support.
One-time payment.
Yeah, one-time payment. And Money Dance works on Linux, Macs, PCs. And it looks just like QuickBooks.
Yep.
So I'm good to go.
Well, but the point here, Bill, is that it is A, not difficult to get into Linux, mm-mm, and B, if you already have an older machine, it's essentially free. And if you don't, pick up a Raspberry Pi for $80.
And the other nice thing, too, is you can, if you're a Windows fan or a Mac fan, you can have that particular version of Linux looking like you're working, whether it's in a Windows box or a Mac environment.
Yep.
Well, thank you, guys.
Yep. Thanks.
Yeah, so there was, in the early days, you used to pay for every new version of the OS. And then it started to become common that you would get the new OS when you bought the new computer.
Right.
And nowadays, yeah, you'd mentioned that in the news last week, technically, if you still have a Windows 7 product key, you can install Windows 11.
Yep.
Although they're cutting down on that.
Yep.
So doing away with it.
Yeah.
It still works today.
Yeah.
As to whether it'll work tomorrow.
It's ticking.
But it still works for 10.
Yeah. So you technically haven't had to pay separately for the OS for a long time, right. Mac or Windows. And Microsoft's bottom line is at stake here. With so many cloud word processor solutions now.
Yeah.
They got to get more money out of Windows.
I mean, the Office packages, you know, how much more can they do? I mean, you can go to Google Docs or some of the others, like you said, and get it for free.
Right.
Versus paying now, then down the road, a subscription.
The point here, really, for Microsoft is they're losing the home market.
Oh, big time.
There's, in terms of revenue, people don't need to buy Microsoft Office anymore.
Mm-mm.
People don't need to buy Outlook anymore.
And a lot of times they don't even need to buy a computer because they're getting a tablet.
They get a tablet
or they
get a Chromebook.
Yeah.
And with that, you're completely outside the Windows ecosystem. They don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're still making their money is in businesses. Businesses can't let go of the idea that we must use Windows and Microsoft Office. I get it. It's a little hinky to think we're going to give everybody Linux machines. Who's supporting this operating system? Well, if you're on Ubuntu, you can pay Canonical to support your machines, just like you're paying Windows.
Yeah,
you're paying Microsoft, and Microsoft doesn't give you unlimited support unless you pay for it. Same with Canonical.
Price,
You don't get unlimited support unless you pay for it. So at any rate, the point is, if you want to play around, what is this? Greaser One says greetings from Las Lunas, New Mexico. It's 62. Shut up. So the point here is, if you're interested in having a new operating system and playing around with Linux and seeing what the free world is like, you can do it on almost any old machine. If you've got an old Mac that's Intel based, you can that you cannot now upgrade to the latest and greatest.
Yep.
You can throw Linux on it, and it will work perfect. I tell you that because I have done it. Eventually, it just stops working because I don't know. A 10-year-old Mac apparently will eventually stop working. I'm shocked at that.
Yeah.
But the point is that you can do it.
It didn't have any warning. Yes, you did. The last 10 years.
It's 10 years old. You had enough warning. But the point is, you can take any old Intel-based machine or any ARM-based machine like a Raspberry Pi or a Rock Pi or a Banana Pi or an Orange Pi, and you can put a version of Linux on it, and there are 10,000 versions of Linux.
And they're working on a version of Linux for the M1, which is technically ARM-based.
It is technically.
Yeah.
So you can do any number of things with an old or inexpensive machine. And right now, if you are willing to go to the little risk-based Raspberry Pi, the 5 is a 2.5 gigahertz machine. It's got 8 gig of RAM.
It works great.
It's a desktop, people. It's a desktop.
Not much bigger than a bar soap.
Right.
And look inside your desktops lately.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of them, even with the small tower ones, it's basically a laptop motherboard on the inside. And I ran into that first with some HP models that had a laptop power cord.
Yep.
The little barrel power cords, not the big. It doesn't even have a regular power supply in it. It's
right.
The laptop power cord with the brick on the leash. It's a laptop in a big case that you'll never put the slots in and extra drive bays anyway.
Yeah, right. The only reason to get it is for the huge fan.
Yeah.
and being able to add more memory.
Well, but even so, if you've got a laptop motherboard in there, aren't adding a lot more RAM to that either.
Yeah, no. But you could usually add at least another stick.
Maybe.
We've started seeing that a little in the Mac world, is that the iMac all-in-one computer has a 24-inch monitor. If you want something bigger, you get a Mac Mini and a bigger monitor.
Yeah.
So we're sort of moving back to the component-wise. But still, laptops are outselling desktops. And you can always plug a bigger monitor into your laptop, too.
And tablets are outselling laptops.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the fact is, you can easily pick up an old machine, or you've probably got one in a closet somewhere. Throw Linux on it and enjoy yourself. See how much you like it. It costs you nothing but a little bit of time. Lord knows you've got time, and it's a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
So go for it.
Especially with the winter months coming on. Set that project up for something to do in your free time while you're at home.
That's right. So, it's not a difficult thing to do, and at the very least, you have some fun. And at the most, you may find that you don't need to be tethered to Windows anymore. All right. That music tells us that the first hour of this show is now in the history books. But do not despair. There is an entire another hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That means a whole another hour of sound bites. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright, for which I apologize. A whole nother hour of Steve Ray, for which we can do nothing. Yeah, we're just stuck with him. And a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, which may be the worst of the lot. And a whole nother hour of your calls, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. And we will take a bio break. Get yourself a beverage, and we'll see you on the other side for the whole another hour of sound bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. While you do that, I'll read the news. Now, we have already had a story about Apple's insecurities and how you have to fix them. It's time for Microsoft's insecurities.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's just an ongoing saga.
Yeah, it's not really news anymore.
Yeah.
Microsoft has released patches to fix zero-day vulnerabilities in two popular open-source libraries that affect several Microsoft products, including Skype, Teams, and its Edge browser. But Microsoft won't say if... it's my favorite part. Microsoft won't say if those 0 days were exploited to target its products or if the company knows either way. The two vulnerabilities, known as 0 days because developers had no advance notice to fix the bugs, were discovered a whole month ago. They were discovered a whole month ago, and both bugs have been actively exploited to target individuals with spyware, included, according to researchers at Google and Citizen Lab.
And we're shocked why?
Yeah, exactly. The bugs were discovered in two common open source libraries, WebP and LibVPX, which are widely integrated into browsers, apps, and phones to process images and videos. The ubiquity of these libraries, coupled with a warning from security researchers that the bugs were abused to plant spyware, prompted a rush by tech companies, phone makers, and app developers to update the vulnerability libraries in their products. In a brief statement, Microsoft said it had rolled out fixes addressing the two vulnerabilities in the WebP and LibVPX libraries, which it had integrated into its products, and acknowledged that exploits exist for both vulnerabilities. However, a Microsoft spokesrobot declined to say if the products had been exploited in the wild or if the company had the ability to even know that. According to Citizen Lab, the bug in the vulnerability WebP library that Apple also integrates into its products was exploited without requiring any interaction from the device owner, a so-called zero-click attack. Microsoft rolled out security fixes for iPhones, iPads, Macs, and watches and acknowledged the bug may have been exploited by unknown hackers. Google, which relies on the WebP library in Chrome and other products, also began patching the bug in early September to protect its users from an exploit that Google said it was aware existed in the wild. Mozilla, which makes the Firefox browser and Thunderbird email clients, also patched the bugs in its app, knowing that Mozilla was aware, noting that Mozilla was aware the bug had been exploited in other products. Later in September, Google security researchers said they found another vulnerability, this time in the LibVPX library, which Google said had been abused by a commercial spyware vendor, which Google declined to name. Google rolled out an update to fix that vulnerability, integrated into Chrome soon afterwards. Apple issued a security update on Wednesday to fix the LibVPX bug in iPhones and iPads, along with another kernel vulnerability that Apple said exploited devices running software earlier than iOS 16.6.
Say it again, please.
As it turns out, the 0 day in LibVPX also affected Microsoft products, though it remains unclear if hackers were able to exploit it against users of Microsoft products. Hurry up and patch, Microsoft users. You're a month behind. And then give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415.
These are some popular open libraries that are used by all platforms.
Well, I got updates to those libraries on Linux a while ago and thought, I didn't see these updates for anything else yet.
Yeah.
And then they started to roll out from Apple and from Google and other places. And now finally Microsoft. So that'll be nice. And the reality is that, again, these are zero-day exploits. It means we know that they are being actively exploited in the wild. Microsoft won't acknowledge that, but everybody else has.
And Microsoft has started calling everything a zero-day exploit because they didn't find it. Someone else did.
Right.
Well, this was a good guy who told you about it before the bad guys might have found it.
Right.
But we don't know if the bad guys did find it or not.
Right. Right. So that's a thing. That's a thing that you're going to have to deal with from now on. It's just a fact.
Back to life.
There's bugs and you need to be updating. And like Steve said, I know we tell people don't get a zero. Mm-hmm. Right? Don't get, you know, 16.0, 17.0. Wait for 0.1 at least.
The update.
But that
update
does leave you vulnerable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, are you going to get hit? You can always say to yourself, I'm not important. Nobody's looking for me. No. It's all being done by computers now. They'll hit every machine they can find on the internet at computer speeds. Yes, there are some targeted attacks. Some political group specifically hits another political group or religious group or ethnic group. But those are rare. Mostly
they're selectively.
Right. Mostly it's just, oh, look, I found a computer. Let's see if it's vulnerable.
Yeah.
See what I can steal on it and see what I can get in there steal. And
if I get $5 out of this one, great. That's $5 I didn't have yesterday.
Or just grabbing email addresses that they can then sell to spammers.
Right.
Yeah.
They make money off of that.
Every now and then there's a surge of spam that people get. Well, how come suddenly I just started getting new spam? Your email address got sold to somebody.
Yeah. That's right.
How do I stop that? Get a new email address.
Right. Well,
and that's worse than moving. Getting a new postal address is fairly easy because at least there's one post office to go through. A
but
new
email
address
is horrible.
But that's
why viruses, they're not all gone, but a lot of them have just gone away because the
There's a difference between they're not making new ones and the old ones are still out there.
Oh, yeah. So, the old ones are still out there.
Yeah.
But the thing of it is, though, is these writers have changed their focus. Instead of writing stuff that, it takes down a network, no big deal. Oh, I can write this and then have it go out there, a little bit of code, sniff millions, that's millions of computers at a time,
right,
and gather email addresses or other personal information because they got their system wide open, and then turn around and sell it and make money.
In the early days, it was just like bragging rights or put your name on the wall, pop your hacker name up on somebody's screen. Right. Nowadays, this is organized businesses stealing hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars every year.
Exactly, but like Nick said, the old viruses are still out there. You still need an antivirus program.
Right.
That's the bottom line there. But again, we have always recommended running Super Anti-Spyware and Malwarebyte, two programs, because no one of them does it fully, and to help keep your machine safe, both from virus attacks and spyware and malware.
And depending on where your email is, so for example, a Gmail address, Google does an awfully good job of killing spam before it gets you. Nobody does perfect.
Mm-mm. Can't.
But Google does a pretty good job. Other companies may not do as good a job.
Right.
So, be aware of that as well. Let's go to the phones. Our next caller is Carlos from Rochester, New York. What's up, Carlos?
Nice to see you back.
Thanks.
How are you?
Getting better every day. Thank you very much.
I am so glad to see you again.
Thanks.
I am running Linux Mint 21.2 Vera, and I want to know what the difference is between the Flatpaks and the system apps. Whether one uses more memory than the other one, or one is faster than the other one.
Okay, so the big difference is when you load a regular app, it has any application has a lot of dependencies, library dependencies. Yeah. So you load something and it's going to use a little piece of this C library and a little piece of this other library and a little piece of this IO library and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the app, if you load a regular system app, it has to load all those libraries into your machine. One of the problems is, depending on what version of software you're using. Now, this usually doesn't happen when you're only running stuff out of your repository. But if you download something from somewhere else, et cetera, you can get conflicting libraries. That's a problem. With both Flatpak and the other one, Snap, Flatpak and Snap, what they do is they package everything and run each app in its own little virtual machine.
Uh-huh.
So every app has all the libraries it needs, all the system tools it needs, all the everything it needs to run, which means that they're bigger files. They take longer to load, but they aren't going to interfere with anything else ever. And, back in the day when we had 2 gig machines and 4 gig machines, a RAM, that was a problem. But now people have 8 gig and 16 gig and 32 gig machines, and running flat packs and running snaps are not difficult at all, and are much easier. And it makes it also a little bit safer, because, assuming you trust the person who wrote the flat pack, because what it means is that you aren't sharing a library with somebody you don't know. Right?
Do flat packs from GitHub, for example, have the newest version as opposed to Snap?
No, they're just really two different versions of essentially the same thing. And, you know, it depends on the programmer as to which they prefer and how often they update each.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, guys.
Thanks, Carlos.
So nice to see you back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Take care.
To be seen.
The wonderful thing about standards is there's so many of them to choose from.
And they're all conflicting. It has been a controversy in the Linux ecosystem for
a while now.
Quite a while now, with snaps and flat packs and apps. And like I said, the big thing is that, I'm sure I'm going to get email or something from somebody who says, well, it's not exactly 100% correct. I don't want to do a 40-minute explanation. But the fact is that one of the, and it again, it's an issue between, computer systems, right? So if I've got an older, slower machine with less RAM, I don't want to run snaps and I don't want to run flat packs. So they take forever to load and they take up too much RAM. If I'm running a machine with 16 or 32 gig of RAM and it's a super fast machine with an SSD drive, mm-hmm. I don't even notice that I'm loading snaps or flat packs.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. As we move along, we're going to find that more people use flat packs and snaps. I know people who've stopped using a distribution because it has snaps in it. Off my lawn.
They've been having a stimulated discussion.
Stimulated discussion.
At Security Now about swap files on Windows.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people ask, so many computers have SSDs now, that a swap file will wear out your SSD faster because it's reading and writing all the time.
Yep.
And so Steve says he turns off his swap file. And then there are people, Windows, you have to have a swap file. So Steve said, if you have enough RAM, you don't need a swap file.
Right.
He's never said how much RAM is enough.
Right.
So, but in the past, he's talked about his 8-core i7 with 64 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, probably doesn't need
that. Enough.
Well, the other thing that I've seen people do, and I used to do it myself, is I'd get an old spinning drive.
Right, a second drive for your swap.
And it only has to be, 200 meg, 500 mm-hmm. meg.
Mm-hmm. Well, it used to be the other way around. You had a spinning drive, you put like a 16 gig flash drive in as your swap.
Right. But this the other way around now.
Yeah.
So I've got a swap file I used to have back in the days when
back
I ran Windows. I would have a swap file that was an old spinning drive. And because I now have one drive loading a new program and the other drive swapping out the space, the load is so much faster and the system runs so much faster
when
the swap drive is on a different drive.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, back in the day, you had to say, which channel did you have?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the whole master-slave, only one could be running at a single time.
Right.
So if both your drives were on the same IDE channel,
right,
then it would stop one drive to spin up the next one, and so that made it worse. So put two separate change.
Right.
So that's one nice thing about SATA. You can only have one drive on a SATA bus, but every bus is now separate.
Right, exactly.
And so you can have, in fact, most, especially tower machines, will have at least 4 SATA connectors internally.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Alan, calling all the way from Durham, North Carolina. Hi, Alan. How are things in Durham?
Well, it's kind of dull here. How about you guys?
Yeah, it's been a little cloudy. It's Rochester, New York. It's yes. cloudy and it's cool.
Don't like the weather? Wait an hour.
Right.
Or move out.
Yeah, exactly. Like you did. So what's up?
I do. Question. I'm a serial antivirus user. I went through Avast. They pissed me off. I went to AVG. They pissed me off. Now I've got Kaspersky and Malwarebytes on a machine now. And they just keep on popping up pop-ups on a screen trying to get me to buy more stuff. Boom, boom, boom. Half an hour goes by. Boom, boom, boom. Can you recommend an antivirus that isn't going to be shouting at me all the time?
That's a lovely question.
Yeah, and even when you pay for it, the ads come up to have you pay for the next level up.
Yeah. All right. Are you? What are you running?
Windows.
Take a look at Clam AV.
What?
Yeah. Clam AV is a free open source antivirus scanner. It works for Windows, Linux, and Mac devices. It can detect and remove various types of malware, trojans, worms, rootkits, a little bit of everything. I have been using it for decades, and it has never shown me an ad.
Really? And it's a real thing?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We've talked about it for years.
Does Clam stand for anything, or did it stand for anything?
I don't know. I don't think it did.
Maybe the guy likes seafood.
Maybe it did. Who knows? It was originally developed for Unix systems. It ran on AIX, BSD, OpenVMS, Solaris. I did use it on Solaris. I remember that now. But it also runs on Windows, and it was originally developed by Cisco and all kinds of things. So it runs on pretty much dang near anything you can boot.
I'll give it a whirl.
So
there you go.
Yeah. If the version you should pay for it if it'll let you that any antivirus, I'm not just saying Clam, but any particular antivirus that lets you pay for it, you should
just showing support.
So
for the
Clam AV is free, the Clam Win version at clamwin.com. But they do have a make a donation button. So,
okay. Can I have another question?
Yeah.
When you're starting up a new computer and you install Firefox and you import all your bookmarks in exactly the way they tell you to do, and it tells you that you successfully imported all the bookmarks, there should be a little link in the bookmarks bar up top that'll access the bookmarks, right?
I'm sorry. Say the last part again.
Under the box where you put the URL where you want to go through, there's a bookmarks bar.
Right.
And when you import the bookmarks, there should be a little link in that bookmarks bar that says bookmarks that you click to get to the bookmarks, right?
Right.
It may not put it in that bar. You may have to open the bookmarks window, and it's in a folder called imported.
Right. Also, in any new version, it may not be showing you the bookmarks bar.
Well, I get the bookmarks bar.
Okay.
But what do you mean open up the bookmarks window? What do you mean by that?
The bookmark manager in Firefox, the three lines on the right, there's a command to open your bookmarks manager. It's Control Shift O.
Yeah.
And that lets you manage and rearrange your bookmarks. And so it may have imported the bookmarks into a folder called imports, because I've seen that happen.
And then you can move them from there to where you want to put them.
You know, none of the instructions for importing ever say anything about that stuff.
Yeah, right. And they probably
it's
should.
Saying, where do you want to import them to? Well, I want to import them to my bookmarks. And then it doesn't say how to get to them. So I'm on the Mozilla page now. Well, they're in your bookmarks. But they may be in the bookmarks menu, not the bookmarks bar.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. Yeah. The bookmarks bar is considered individual for each computer.
Yeah.
So moving your bookmarks over means they go into Firefox, but Firefox doesn't assume you want all the same bookmarks in the bookmarks bar that you had in the old machine.
Well, you would want a link to the bookmarks somewhere so you can access them.
Right, it probably in the bookmarks menu.
Yeah, so if you were to, on Firefox, you can go to the little three bars
in the hamburger
menu in the upper right and click on that, and you'll see a link to bookmarks. And then you can see all of your bookmarks there.
Yeah, and I'm seeing on the Mozilla support page, you know, step six after you click import, it says, all set, your bookmarks are imported into the bookmarks menu.
Yeah, right. And it's right there.
Right, in your bookmarks menu. So you have to go to the menu to find where those bookmarks got imported to.
Right.
Yeah.
And then rearrange them to the folders you want.
Yeah.
Who knows that?
Right.
We do.
That's why
now you do.
And, yeah.
Well, Nick, it's nice to hear one of the great radio voices ever back on the air.
Thank you. I think the greatest radio voice ever was Carl Castle, but that's just me.
There's a few.
Thank you so much.
Guys.
Enjoy the weather down there.
Thank you so much.
A little bit better than what's up here.
No snow.
That's a good thing.
We'll all be down to visit, Ellen. Thanks.
No, yet. That's where the snow's supposed to head, is south. Like they did, what was it, last year in Texas?
Yeah.
You guys got some, too, in North Carolina, correct?
We always get one day of snow, just one day.
Yeah, my friend Scott, who's in North Carolina, too, said, yeah, he loves it. He'd go over to a parking lot and try to do donuts in a parking lot.
We always end up stopping at the Cracker Barrel in Wilson, right off 95, going through the Raleigh-Durham area. It's like, well, you hungry? Yeah, all right. There's that Cracker Barrel we always end up stopping at.
Right. All right, thanks, Ellen.
Cracker Barrel will give you exactly enough food for you not to be hungry.
Right.
And not one calorie more.
All right, thanks, Ellen.
Thanks, guys.
Have fun.
Bye.
My aunt moved to Silver Spring, Maryland, and she was a little bird woman. She was probably 5 feet tall in high heels, and she went out to visit some friends. She was from Rochester. She went out to visit some friends of hers in her Cadillac, of course. Oh, my God, Rose.
Could she barely see over the steering wheel?
Through the steering wheel.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, Rose, how did you get there? How did you get here? It's snowing. It's horrible. She said, Nick, I looked behind me. It was a dusting.
Yeah.
It wasn't even up to the hubcap. She said, I didn't even notice it had snowed.
Yeah.
But, you know, in Silver Spring, Maryland, apparently that's a lot of snow.
If it's, if it doesn't
things
hit,
shut down.
If you don't hit the axle, then you're okay. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, things just shut down.
Yep.
Oh, my God, Rose, how did you get here?
My brother lived in North Carolina for a while, and same thing, he would talk about that. The farmers would have a field day pulling people out of ditches.
Oh, yeah.
There's hardly any snow to cause you to skid to begin with.
But they don't have the tires. They're usually running donuts.
I have a friend who lives down south. She said, we have that problem in the rain.
Mm-hmm.
These people don't know how to drive in the rain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Like I say, but they run their down the south. I can remember going through Georgia. All the tires that were on the side of the road because they run recaps.
Oh, yeah.
You could probably make a lifetime supply of tires out of all those.
Well, I can't talk because when I was in college, you could see the air in my tires. Yeah. They were so thin. But and I get that. But
how many times can I recap it again?
Yeah, exactly. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Sound Bites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And don't forget, tomorrow night at 9 p.m., you can join us in the Sound Bites Lounge. Go to soundbites.org/lounge and at 9, refresh at 9 o'clock. You'll see us there. We'll be right back.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Rich from around Aquitaine, New York on the line. What's up, Rich?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
It is.
I have paid good money for LastPass, and I don't think I'm getting my money's worth. For instance, if I go to Amazon and they want a password, LastPass will pop up and want my major password.
Master password, right. Yeah.
I'll fill it in, and then it will ask a second time. Okay, so I fill it in a second time, and then I go to Amazon, for instance, and nothing happens. If LastPass does give me a password, fill in the blank, it's wrong. Am I doing something wrong, or is that just how that thing works? What could be the problem?
It doesn't sound like it's a problem with you.
Sounds like a problem with
which,
the program.
Yeah, which browser are you using?
Okay. So that has a bearing. I'm not sure which one I have been using. I can choose four or five.
Yeah. I would make sure that the plugin, the LastPass plugin, is updated in each of the browsers.
Right, because the way it works is through an extension, and you may have to upgrade to the latest version of the extension. And in fact, what LastPass says is you uninstall the current version of the extension, not of LastPass, but of the extension in the browser, and then reinstall the newest version.
I'm not sure I understand what you are saying. Can you?
Okay, so you have LastPass on your machine.
Yes.
To connect it to your browser runs an extension that connects the browser to LastPass.
Okay.
That extension needs to be updated. But LastPass doesn't really update the extension correctly. So what you need to do is uninstall the extension and then reinstall it as if it were new.
Usually what you got to do is go over to the upper right-hand corner to settings thing. And a drop-down window will appear, and there's you'll see a thing that says extensions.
Yeah, whether you're in Firefox or Chrome or Edge.
And you click on that, it'll open it up, and it'll show you all the extensions that are installed for that particular browser. You would then click on the LastPass and say delete. So it will remove it. Then you can go ahead on the left-hand side and install the latest version because you'll have downloaded it.
So you're not deleting LastPass itself off your computer. You're deleting that extension, which is just a connection
like talking
between
to
the
it,
browser
yeah.
and LastPass itself.
Okay, so the beginning of that, the beginning is go to the upper right where all those drop-down things are, and one of the words will be,
well, it depends on which browser you're using, but yes, usually you will see it directly as extensions. It might be under tools.
Or settings.
Or settings. It depends on which browser you're using.
But you're going to look for the item that says extensions, because all your extensions are going to be in that little folder. And whether you're using Firefox or Chrome, usually you have three or four extensions running in that that folder.
And that act will allow LastPass to fill in correct passwords?
Yes. What happens is you've got an old version of that extension, and it is not working correctly
it's
with the new version of LastPass itself.
Okay. Please define extension.
An extension is an add-on to the browser.
Extends the functionality of the browser.
Right. To add on to do something else. In this case, it's an add-on that lets the browser and LastPass talk to each other.
It's like it's like a phone connection. It's taking your main program, and LastPass is like calling up your browser. And because you've got the extension in there, it's picking up the phone and saying, yeah, can I help you? And it'll say, oh, yeah, you're in here. So it allows the two to talk to each other and carry on the conversation.
Wow. Thank you. There are times when you guys have promoted I don't want to use the word because you probably don't want to sound too prejudiced, but you've mentioned NPAS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I believe that you feel that NPAS perhaps does a better or simpler job than LastPass.
Well, one of the problems is that LastPass had a very serious password breach last year. Every one of their 25 million users had their password vault stolen. So if you've been using LastPass for more than a year, your password vault was stolen. And in the early days of LastPass, it wasn't encrypted very strongly because 20 years ago it didn't need to be. But LastPass never updated the encryption on longtime users. And so now we are starting to hear, I think it was Citizens Lab, one of the security companies, was able to trace about $35 million in stolen crypto coins to the LastPass vaults that are now being decrypted, brute force decryption, because they weren't encrypted very well. And LastPass hasn't really said anything about that.
Right.
They say, oh, yeah, there's nothing to worry about. Your password vault is encrypted. But 20 years ago, it wasn't encrypted.
It wasn't a little while ago, last year.
Okay. Now, if I wanted or if one wanted to begin NPAS, does NPAS actually go to LastPass and withdraw or take the passwords out of LastPass's vault?
Sort of. You can export from LastPass to a file and then import that file to NPAS.
I see. Okay.
I think we posted a link on that already, and if we didn't, I'll post another one.
Okay. But the key word here is extensions.
Yep.
Thanks, gentlemen. I am a member.
That's what we like to hear. Thank you.
Have a good day and weekend. Thanks.
You too. Bye-bye. There's...
Yeah, here it is. Yeah, so it's security researchers. We're trying to find some link between these different crypto accounts that have been stolen, and it's mostly people that are security conscious and security aware. And the thing that they mostly found is that it probably was this LastPass breach, and the passwords are getting brute forced. Because in the early days, there was only one iteration, then there was 100 iterations. Today, they're saying a million iterations is what you should have, because in 20 years, that will be easily broken.
Right.
So LastPass never updated the iteration count in their encryption.
Well, and the other thing you have to remember is that the encryption is also based on your password.
Right.
So if your password is 12345, the encryption is not going to be very good.
Yep.
If your encryption is 32 characters, it's going to be a whole lot better.
Yeah.
And then we're talking about the master password here.
Right. And the interviewed one guy who did agree to be interviewed.
Right.
And said he had a very long password that was it was a good strong password, but it was in his LastPass vault. He had set up another crypto coin wallet and was getting ready to move everything out of his old wallet with the LastPass password and just hadn't got around to it yet. He lost $3.4 million.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Greece. What's up, Bill?
Yeah, this is for Alan from Durham. On Firefox, if you right-click on the toolbar, you'll get a drop-down menu that allows you to customize the toolbar.
Yeah.
In there, there's an icon that you can drag to the toolbar that is a direct link to your bookmarks, so you don't have to go the long route. You can just click the link. Also in there is a plus minus that you can drag up, so when you go to a web page, you can quickly increase the web page by clicking on the plus minus, and that stays permanent the next time you open it.
Nice.
Just a tip for Alan.
Thanks,
yeah,
Bill.
Getting to the bookmark manager is slightly different in each browser.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thanks, Bill. This is my favorite part of the show, of course, when our users bring out tips and stuff like that. That's my favorite part. One of the issues we have, of course, is that if you're not entirely sure which browser you're using, we can't give you explicit directions on how to get to whatever the fix is. So I get that. But Yeah, every browser does have something like what Bill just mentioned. So it depends on which browser you have as to how that's going to work. All right, let's head back to the phones. Nope, now we can head back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark, also from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Hey, curmudgeon.
Ha ha ha, you're right.
I have even a better solution for the Firefox thing. Ah. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Download a little, teeny little executable called Moz Backup, M-O-Z Backup. And it allows you to back up most Mozilla-style browsers, not every one of them, but some of the more popular ones. And it also allows you to back up Thunderbird. And when you back your browser up, it takes everything like a snapshot. So when you can reinstall it all back in, and it comes in the way it was with your bookmark folders where they were. Everything is exactly where you left it.
Nice. Thank you.
So that's, but even easier, just use Chrome.
Mm-hmm. Well, right.
Yeah.
Which does it all automatically.
Yep. Yep. Well, Firefox will too if you make a Firefox account with Mozilla.
Right.
And it'll back up everything and bring it back in too. But, you know, either way, I think Chrome is the easiest.
Yeah. Well, the idea, what Mark is talking about here is the fact that Chrome, it's kind of automatic that when you log in, you're logging into your Gmail account. In Firefox, you can create a Mozilla account. And in both cases, when you do that, all of your bookmarks and the way your system is set up
just
and everything
comes
else
back in.
Is saved into that cloud account. So when you put the browser on a new machine and say, okay, here's my Gmail account information or here's my Mozilla account information, it says, oh, do you want to just bring back everything so your browser looks the same? Yes, I do. Boom, there it is. Yeah.
Yes, it's wonderful.
It really is. Thanks, Mark.
Okay, I'm so glad to have you back.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
Okay, I'll keep in touch with you on Facebook.
All right, it's a deal. Okay. Thanks.
Take it easy.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that is the beauty of cloud storage.
Yep.
When you save everything under that account, then when you, like when I put up a new Chromebook, I can say I want to sync everything from my old Chromebook. Now my new Chromebook is automatically set up to look just like my old Chromebook. It's there, magic. It takes a couple of minutes depending on the speed of your network, but it's just there. And what that means is, and that's all encrypted up in Google land. But again, it's encrypted. One of the things that I keep telling people, everything's encrypted by your password. Your password is the basis for your encryption. Mm-hmm. And the stronger your password, the stronger your encryption. So if your password is 12345, it's the same one on your luggage, you are going to find that it's a problem because it's easily broken. But if your password is longer, oh, I don't like to type a long password. You know what? Get over yourself.
Yep.
I don't care. But if it's a long and complex password, and that doesn't mean it has to be J4732, it can be, I think that I shall never see. The first part of Joyce Kilmer's Trees. And as long as you have capital letters and a number and some symbols in there, you're good. So that's the kind of thing you have to be aware of. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Rochester, New York. What's up, Mike?
Yeah, hi. Speaking about Gmail like you guys just were.
Right.
On a Chromebook, I don't understand what I'm doing wrong, if anything. Every time I try to change my password on Chromebook, go through all the gyrations of, two-factor authentication, blah, 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 with the codes. That'll give me messages, okay, your password's changed. I don't know how long you have to wait until they understand or Google understands that the password checked up, put in, then it'll say incorrect password. And it happens every time. So I go through all the even said I have to go in as a guest on my own property. And try to go that way. I mean, what am I doing wrong? Is there some secret to that you have to wait for a certain time frame?
You do have to wait. Now, one of the things that goes on there, and this is true of Windows and Apple as well, they have it. You know, you don't think of it, but what's going on out there in the cloud, it's enormous, and there's thousands of computers
traffic
out there, and they all sync together, but they don't all sync instantaneously.
I see.
So it depends on which machine you changed your password on and how long it takes to sync to the machine that you then log into next time, because it's all random. And so there's no set time. But one of the things that I tend to do is I change my password. I then shut down my Chromebook. I generally wait about 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then rarely at that point do I have a problem. So 5 minutes is a decent amount of time.
Yeah, I was wondering, maybe I was doing it too fast. Like, I thought that, you know, it was omnipresent and instantaneous, but maybe not, because then it asks for, and when you go in as a guest, I think, it'll also ask you to put in your old password. Well, I don't know what my old password was. I had to look it up at NPass and start all over again.
Right.
But the, yeah, that story about, I just heard about that, LastPass, I had that, and thank God for you guys. I decided to change it when you started talking about it, and I went to NPass, and the LastPass, the horror stories are just incredible. Mm-hmm. So it's a thank you for that very much. Saved my life for that.
We would recommend that people move to NPass.
Switch.
Yeah, I did. Thanks for the recommendation, and
thank you.
Glad you're back. Take care.
Thanks, Mike. And be a little more patient when you change your password.
Yeah.
By the way, Mike has a good point there. You should change your password regularly.
And you should also go into your account setup and make sure you have a recovery email address that's different from that main email address you use, and that your recovery phone number is up to date and current. So one thing he was talking about, you know, he's trying to change his password, and they asked what his last used password was. If you don't remember, and you don't have your current phone number, and or, you know, your recovery address is the Yahoo account you stopped using 10 years ago, you can't get back in to some of these accounts.
That's right. So make sure those are up to date. And again, as we said earlier, Google Gmail accounts are free. Get a second one.
Yeah.
How hard is that?
And I've been seeing it with Apple and Google. I haven't seen it with Microsoft yet, maybe because I don't use it enough.
Right.
But every now and then it pops up and says, is this still your phone number? Because we've had so many customers come in and say, well, that was the phone I had three houses ago.
Right.
Well, and it's more common these days to keep your phone number as you move from house to house and service to service than it used to be.
Yep.
But yeah, if they have an old phone number, there's nothing you can do to get back into your account.
Right.
They can't prove it's you and not someone else trying to break in.
One of the other features, though, in NPass, and probably a lot of folks don't realize this, is when you go in and change your password, and you know, you put it into NPass, and then you change to another one, you go back into that particular one, and NPass also has what they call password history. It will show you your previous passwords in case that one that you just put in didn't take. You can then go back and see what the previous one was.
You can also use the notes field to put your old password in the notes field. The other thing that Google has, and everyone's, it's ghoulish, but they have an inactive account thing where you can say, if I don't log into my account in 3 months, check with this email address, check with this phone number.
The default is a year, because I just got one of those on a customer's account that I don't use for that customer anymore.
Right. So you check with this email, check with this phone number, and check with this person, so you can set another person as the designated
notifier.
Survivor, whatever they call it. And then you can put a thing. So it says, you know, in my case, it's pretty ghoulish. I said, well, if I haven't answered you, I'm probably dead, so stop sending me email. But the point is, you can then say, if you pass, this other person has access to your account.
Legacy contact, some services call that.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, a beautiful thing, because we're at the point where our whole lives are up on those places. And if you pass, who gets access to that? One of the things I do with NPass, all my passwords are in there, and I've put my NPass on my wife's machine. So it's the same username, the same password. She has access to all of my accounts so that she can, you know, if, God forbid.
Well, if you're in the hospital and needs to be paid and you got to get into those accounts, you know, while you were laid up, she could sit there and say, oh, no, no problem. I can go in and make this payment or that payment. And
While I was in the hospital and then in rehab, I had access to all that stuff because I was mobile and coherent. Well, eventually mobile, but certainly coherent and able to play in a laptop. But I could have just reminded my wife, go into NPass, there it all is.
Yep. No, that's why my wife has my master password written down.
Yep.
Anything happened to me, you know, she can go in there. And like I told her, I don't try to remember any password anymore. Even if it's just a trivial website that I'm doing some research on and looking into it, but I had to sign up for it, I put it in NPass. It doesn't cost me anything. I just put it in there and it remembers it.
Right.
Just in case I got to go back to that website.
Right.
And a lot of times I don't even bother thinking of passwords anymore. I let the password generator generate one for me.
Right.
So that joke is, you put a gun to my head, I still can't tell you the password.
That's right.
Well, that's why I was telling her this morning as she's sitting there trying to, she goes, so I can make them as long as you want? I go, maybe.
Right.
I said, I went, because I had a password all set up for my bank that I wanted. It was like 64 characters long. Yep. The bank came back and said, no, you can't do that. You got to have 25 characters.
Right.
So in NPass, all I had to do is take that little slider, move it down to 25 characters. It was still a good password. And it says, okay, that. I said, okay, generate it. And it did.
The only time I ever had a problem was one of my online streaming accounts, which I suddenly had to do the keyboard on screen.
Left, 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 left.
Up, down, over.
Yeah. The first thing I did was I went in and changed that password to something much shorter than 65 characters so that I could log into there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only one where I have a short password.
Yeah. You can use double letters, you know, and then go to over a little bit and maybe a few numbers.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and with some of them, it'll say, or go to, you know, something.com/somewhere. And do it that way. Okay, that I can absolutely do, but this nonsense of 65 characters on a keyboard screen ain't happening.
Have you ever seen the password game by Neil.fun?
No.
Oh, it's hilarious. I showed it to a friend the other day, and he got so pissed right off the bat. So you choose a password. So I'm going to do a horse. And it says, rule 2, you must include a number. Okay, I'll put a 1 in there. Rule 3, you must have an uppercase letter. All right, I'll do that. Rule 4, you got to include a special character. You have to include a Roman numeral. All the digits must add up to 25.
Well, that's the thing that makes me angry. They don't tell you what the limitations are until after you've typed it in wrong.
Yeah.
Excuse me. All right, that music tells us that we are done for another week. But remember, you have a second chance to get in touch with us because tomorrow night, Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, we will be doing the Soundbites Lounge. Just go to soundbites.org/lounge, and that's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. So soundbites.org/lounge. And if you refresh the screen at 9 p.m., you will see a link to that. And we will see you next week in the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.